This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about moving country as a factor in mental health. And this is something that I've wanted to do as a theme. I still very much feel like I'm in the process of my move, that I've been living in Dublin now for, I think, about 6 weeks. But still, you know, there's certain things like we didn't get to move all of my stuff in just one journey. It didn't all fit in the car. So there's still some of my stuff that's in Birmingham. And there's still things that I'm setting up, like sorting out a flatmate to live with and getting some of my routine around my work in order. And so, yeah, it very much feels like the move is still ongoing. So I was really glad to get to have this episode and talk to a repeat guest who's also gone through the experience of moving country, but has done so not as recently as me. And so had loads of wisdom to share. And it was really nice to just sort of reflect on this shared experience that we have as friends and as someone that I feel very close to anyway. So with that all said, we'll talk more about the guest shortly, but we do have an article to read from on this topic. It's one that was tricky to research, really. We've done an episode previously on migration as a factor in mental health, and to my knowledge, we're the only mental health podcast that has covered that specifically, done an episode around it, which slightly blows my mind because it's such a big factor for a lot of people. And yet, even when it comes to the research, so often the stats are very much at the extreme ends of a lot of experiences. And so this article is a really good way of exploring that theme. And so we just wanted to read a section of it. So it's from Hardy Therapy, and the specific counsellor that wrote it is called Sherry Jacobson, who I'm already aware of online, both for her podcasting, and also she has an Instagram of her learning to skate. And I don't know where that came from. If we ever get to interview her, I'd love to find out, because I'm assuming...
What kind of skating?
So rollerblading. And oh, I think it's just something she's interested in and maybe picked up in the pandemic and then realised gets a lot of people eyeballing her page and maybe booking her as a therapist. Because I will say, she feels very relatable. There's nothing like seeing somebody learn a new skill and sometimes do well and sometimes fall over and share that very openly to be like, yeah, you seem like a cool, down-to-earth person.
Yeah, I love that. What a cool thing. I mean, for one, I love roller skating. I always used to turn my nose up at rollerblading because, like, we were the cool kids roller skating, and then rollerblading was like in the States and nobody was rollerblading then. So we were like all four wheels, you know, nice little square under the boot, got the best ones, you know, Christmas present, mum, please can I have some Bowers, for those who know. And I just loved it. I was a real like follower in the halls and going to the places and going backwards and holding the beer mat with the boy and just skating around together thinking, yeah, like living my best life. So I always love it. And it did, loads of people were doing it in the pandemic. Beyonce, like loads of stars, Lady Gaga, like loads of people were into something that people took up. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. So actually, you're right. What a nice way to, you know, it really is, does make you actually completely relatable. It's like when we open up and we share stories, we're just showing some vulnerability. And however we do that, whether it's learning a new skill and putting it out there online or, you know, baking a cake and showing how many times you can burn cupcakes, you know, or just telling your own personal story, whether it's about your mental health or, you know, whatever it could be, just allow people in. So yeah, yes. I like that.
And so we'll take it in turns to read some of her article, which I found a really good exploration of this, and I certainly related to a lot of it.
So there's this great myth it talks about with regard to moving abroad. And it says, moving abroad feeds into a fantasy that most of us have, the fantasy of escaping our jobs, our boredom, escaping the city we live in that costs too much, perhaps escaping our marriages that have lost their spark, or our family and the secret disappointments in us we are sure they harbour. Unconsciously, what many of us want to escape is ourselves. The idea is that if only we lived somewhere more relaxed or exciting, we too would be the more relaxed and exciting person we've always meant to be. It's no wonder when we first are offered a new life overseas, we feel so elated.
And the next section is titled, Everyone Wants to Be You for Now. You'll find it's not just you that gets elated when you do decide to move abroad. It's often everyone around you, which feels exciting and supportive at first. It can eventually become part of the problem, though. The very act of breaking free from regular life makes you the great representative of everyone else's hope that escape is possible. You become the proof that one day too they can make it out to a better life. And that puts a lot of pressure on you to uphold the myth that moving abroad is the answer to inner dissatisfaction. If you start to feel stressed or uncertain, you might feel that admitting to your worries will let others who are excited for you down. Instead, you might choose to suppress your anxiety about the move. And if once you're abroad, things aren't as rosy as you'd hoped and you do feel low, you might deny that you are overwhelmed. The problem with denied anxiety and ignored low moods is they tend to escalate. Left unchecked, they can lead to depression. And the next section is, what about moving and living abroad can cause depression? And there's a few points here, so we're each going to choose one. And I think I'll choose one of the very clear and broadest ones, which is, it's a lot of change happening all at once. So change isn't easy, and it is inevitable that it causes some stress. Even if your thoughts are calm and you feel organised, change can stress out your body, triggering your flight or fight response.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I wonder whether it's true or not in myself, but I think it is. When you always read change isn't easy, and I'm always like, yes, it's exciting. Don't say, you know, I love change. But I guess I've always changed. So for me, it feels exciting. However, one of the other points that is raised, which I can relate to and feel strongly about actually, is that whole grieving process of something that ends. So another point says, for new things to begin, some things have to end. So endings tend to cause the mind to look backwards and create a romantic, often unrealistic, view of the past that we then compare to the worst things going on in the present or projected future. Even things we thought we hated, like our jobs, can suddenly take on a rosy hue that makes us panic about what is to come.
Yeah, and I know a runner-up for both of us was a point, I'll just read the title of number 6, which is, you are still stuck with the same old you, to your surprise. And I think a lot of this article I can relate to because it speaks to the contrast of how exciting moving country can be, and also so challenging at the same time. And it's a difficult balance. And certainly for me, it was very liberating, I think, to talk through this with the guest and someone that I knew would understand and would be able to relate to a lot of my experience at the moment, where it's like, I absolutely feel really at home here. And I'm so glad with how it's going. And I feel I'm settling in really fast. But I think, similar to you, we're both people that really love change, but that doesn't mean it's not challenging. So I can be so delighted with all that's going on and all the sort of re-immersion in somewhere that I feel so at home. But also, it is change to my routine. It is change to what friends I can meet up with and who isn't nearby anymore. And all this change is stressful. It is tiring. It is stuff to wrap your head around. And I can find myself feeling quite worn out, even after what might seem like a straightforward day, because you're still sort of taking it all in. And also what Sherry says about the pressures you can feel, that obviously so many people are excited about this move. And so you can feel that pressure to only talk about the good parts. And actually, if you are having a lonely day, to sort of withdraw a little bit and be like, okay, I won't talk to people about that. I'll sort of won't be as social and won't share as much how I'm feeling today. And as we talk about on the show, it's so dangerous when we start judging our emotions like that and thinking which ones are valid to share and which are less so. And one final thing I'd say on that is that it's been really lovely actually having my parents to talk to about this, because they obviously understand the experience of moving. And, you know, my mom in particular will often say, you know, there are lonely days. You know, and when she moved to Birmingham, it was a very different place, you know, and she'd be going around these concrete streets and thinking, I used to live by the sea. You know, she had come from living in Dublin, and then she's going for a walk along a dual carriageway to her local Asda, and she's like, you know, you might have your doubts, you can see it. And yet, you know, she did settle in so well, and the city is, you know, so beautiful. She's seen it really come alive in the time that she's lived in Birmingham. And it's really nice to have that. And actually, one thing that I wanted to tell you about, because I think it's quite funny actually, is in many ways, it feels like the first time my parents are really treating me like an adult. You know, there's that thing of like when you go round to theirs for dinner or whatever, they're always there like, and are you eating enough? And are you wearing a coat outside and all this sort of stuff? And I think it's kind of funny and feels very typically Irish that even though I'm coming back to Ireland, it's taken moving country, it's taken going through that very common experience for Irish people in order for them to be like, oh yeah, well that's a very adult thing to do. They did that and not a dissimilar, I mean, a bit younger than me, but not a dissimilar life stage.
Yeah. Like coming of age. You've come of age now. Yeah.
So it's been interesting. But yeah, it was so lovely, like I said, to talk it through with Lily and get to sort of, I think, get a few things off my chest where there have been challenges. But that doesn't override the fact that I'm so glad to be here and that the move is going really well.
Yes, I think that's a really good point. You made a couple of really good points there. I think the one, you know, about us making decisions in our lives for these big changes. I said to a friend the other day, you know, until we make these decisions in life, we're not ever going to know if it's the right one or not. And we can always make another one. You know, I think especially with our mental health, when you experience anxiety, it can sometimes really hinder our decision-making and can really stop us from potentially making some decisions because our anxiety can overwhelm us in terms of, will it be the right thing? Won't it be the right thing? And sometimes when we push through that and we make something happen, something else then happens and then something else happens and you're like, wow, you know, that decision did work because of that and did help with that. And I've never really looked at it in this way in terms of moving because it always excites me, but then I've never moved abroad. And well, I mean, I did at what, 19, I went and worked as a rep for like a year or something abroad. And so I guess that was moving abroad, but it didn't feel like it would now in terms of responsibilities. Bob, I had no responsibility, nowhere to live, no job, and I didn't care. I just wanted to get a house with a load of flatmates and find a job as a waiter and just live my life. You know, it was cool for me. So probably there would have been some uncertainty. And like, I called my mum every day. Like, I mean, I'm not even that old, but we were putting money in phone boxes then. So I'm like calling my mum with a euro. And even that shows my age. They weren't euros, they were pesetas. And I'm like, mum, hi, every day, and ringing home and stuff. So that would have been my real comfort blanket, actually, the fact that I could ring her every day, you know, or ring my grandmother who'd say, what's the weather like? Every time I spoke to her, and, oh, you've got to have a Spanish tomato. They make lovely tomatoes in Spain. But that was my comfort and that was my home. Whereas to do it now or even with my children, imagine the weight that that would bring. But it is exciting. But I've never looked at it necessarily in this way. The point around, you know, we're still the same person. I've not been too well, my own mental health, for the last few months. And I often feel like I put a different like time on that every time I say it, depending on its severity. Like it's probably been a few years, but sometimes it's not too bad and sometimes it's shit. So depending on what level I'm focusing on depends on the time. So the listeners might hear weeks one day, months the next. So yeah, but I think that because there's been some major changes that are going on in my life and since COVID and moving house and my daughter's going to a new school next year and my job and loads of big changes, my career and stuff at home and my relationships, it feels like that I felt worse because of that. And those things potentially are triggers, don't get me wrong, but ironically, you feel like you should know better because you work professionally in this space. And you said it beautifully, and love when you said that we judge our emotions. Like I judge my emotions. get a handle on that, it's so much better and easier to deal with. But anyway, I feel like those things that I've talked about in my environment, that I'll be okay once they get back, once they change and they're sorted out, I won't feel like this. It's the same with that point, isn't it? You know, you're still your same old you, whatever was going on, going away or running away or making some big decisions. That's just know that that's not necessarily going to change where you're at.
Yeah. And I think it's a very natural thing for us to do, right? Because it feels more manageable to externalize that and think, okay, I'm stressed because I find my job stressful. And if I change my job, I'll feel better. And that can feel like a manageable way of thinking about it. I think sometimes as well, it's a way that we kind of protect ourselves mentally of what we can handle. And so if we focus on that thing and put a lot of our feelings on a singular thing or maybe a few things that are external, then that keeps us from being like, okay, well, is that really true? Because I come home from work and things stress me out at home that aren't related to work. And it can feel too much to look at all of that and to realize how much you might need to change. And so, yeah, I always find that interesting. You know, there's that concept, isn't there, about going traveling to find yourself. And I always think of the phrase, wherever you go, there you are. And so it's sort of like, I can understand it to an extent, because here I am in Ireland and I have so much connection to the place and the culture. And so I, in many ways, do feel like at times I make more sense here than I do in England. But, you know, this idea that you're going to go off to the Himalayas for 6 months if you've got no connection to the culture and you're going to find yourself there can be a bit of a stereotype we can sort of be a bit cynical of. But sometimes it's one of these difficult things where it can go both ways, because on one hand, sometimes it can be really transformational to change your environment as a way to kind of free you up and build a new life. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can give you the confidence to make decisions that you wouldn't, you know, maybe you wouldn't have run the risk of moving job if you stayed where you're living. But if you're moving, well, then you have to change job. And that seems like a smaller change in comparison. So, yeah, all of that to say this, it's a complicated process. It's a big deal. And I feel very lucky to have people that I can talk to honestly about some of the challenges, and have enough family members that in particular have moved across the Irish Sea in both directions. You know, I'm not the only one of my cousins that's moved back. So yeah, so this was a really meaningful episode to me, and our guest is someone I'm such a fan of, both as a friend and of her work. So Lily Ash was previously on an episode we did, I believe, back in 2018 on the theme of speaking up. And she is someone that, as you'll hear if you go back to that episode, had not really been talking about her mental health in any kind of routine way, like we're so used to talking about it constantly at this point, and took the big step to do a TEDx talk on her mental health, and in particular some of the things that she'd gone through when she was younger that she'd not shared before. And that then became a leap pad for her to realize, oh, actually there's so much power in sharing your story and finding out that you can be surprisingly relatable. I mean, that's certainly something I find a lot, where I'm like, oh, people share my experience and they understand things that I've been through that feel very distinctively me. It's really incredible. And so we'd previously talked about that, and I totally recommend checking out that episode. So I'll link that episode. I'll also link the article that we read from as well. It also has some great tips about how to specifically manage depression if you're experiencing that around a move abroad. But I think that would also apply with moving within a country as well, a lot of the advice.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a big change generally. So do check those out. And I don't know what else to say. Lily's such a wonderful guest. She's a great friend. I connected with what she shared a lot, and it was just fascinating to hear about her move and a lot of the similarities. I think neither of us realised how much we'd feel parallel with our experiences, given that we've moved to different countries on a different time scale. That's all I'll say. It's a wonderful episode. I think so. So we'll get into that in a moment. Was there anything else you wanted to say?
Well, I was just going to say that I just think it was quite a good point you raised about your, with your parents coming over, and that we've both come from families who are immigrants and who've come over here for work, ultimately. And I just think it's really important to put it in perspective in that moment, and some of the conversations that you've had and that I've had around moving and change with the millions of people that are moved without choice, and how it must have felt for not only, you know, our ancestors, but the fact that it's happening now in the current climate every single day, that people are being forced to move and change. And I think it's, when we're talking about change and impact it can have on our mental health, we really need to stop sometimes and recognise and perhaps think about those that are what we call living in our kind of hidden communities, those that we're not always thinking about, refugees and people who are seeking asylum, etc. What they must be going through is absolutely huge. There's a whole world of people out there that are being forced to change, and perhaps we as a nation, as a society, could be a little bit more kind when we're talking and thinking about those people, because the impact that that has on their mental health is statistically like unbelievable. So we, you know, just a point I wanted to make, feels quite close to my heart at the moment.
Of course. And yeah, this is it. It's very sensitive topics we're talking about. And I'm really glad that we have a platform where we get to explore them and where we get to go into the nuance that these topics deserve. And so it meant a lot to me to get to talk through this in detail with Lily. But absolutely, you're right that no experience of moving country is the same, and there's so many different reasons why people move, and there's a lot to relate to, but it's also not comparable. And yeah, so I'm glad that we're getting to cover different elements.
And I'm really proud of you and how brave you've been moving, right? You literally, yeah, you've gone back to what I would think is your motherland, really. But it still doesn't mean that it's not all change and all quite, you know, overwhelming with trying to look at work and friends. And yeah, you've got your, you know, the podcast and your own business, which is global. You know, you can travel anywhere in the world with that. But to get out there and get some work just to meet people and to join this or do that or find a housemate and, you know, just all of those things. So as much as it's exciting, I'm glad that you've also found this episode supportive, I guess, and that you've checked back in with your friend and to share that, because it's, and that you've had the opportunity to explore that for yourself, because it is a thing and it's easy to probably think it shouldn't be a thing or it's not a thing. Yeah, so well done. Yeah. You.
Thank you. And yeah, I think it also felt important for the listeners as well to let people into how much is going on, how much change has been. I mean, we've talked about, for both of us really, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And that has interfered with our routine and mm-hmm. our ability to be as ahead on episode recordings as we want. And so it was really nice to get to kind of talk about that and share, okay, it's been a challenging time in some ways, it's been a very exciting time mostly, and we've learned a lot from it. Certainly I can speak for myself, and I think you found the same with certain things you're working on as well. So yeah, good chats. All right, so we'll get into the episode with all that said, but first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Hello everyone, my name is Lily. Reflecting on how my mental health has been these past few years feels like a big thing. It's interesting to think about different time scales. I tend to think quite short term. I always feel so in it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But looking back 3 or 4 years ago, I was actually in maybe a much more difficult mind space than I had really realized, because I had left university and I was trying to kind of make my way in the professional world. I was starting up a business, and I think as well, I didn't have such great support systems around me, sort of like therapeutic support. I had great friends and things, but I think just felt really keenly the sort of sense of trying to find my identity and how I was going to make ends meet, really practical things like surviving. And that was quite stressful. And so when I look back now, I can see a lot of things that I was doing that might point to the fact that I actually wasn't doing as great as I thought I was, like just lots of escaping through partying or yeah, just different things. So yeah, that's probably 3 or 4 years ago. But then as as time has gone on, I have become more and more grounded. I was living in Edinburgh at the time, and I ended up finding a really great flatmate, Helen, and we lived together, and it was a really profound impact of finding someone I felt comfortable and safe living with, who's a friend, and we communicated well, and I was in a relationship that was just sort of blossoming, and that felt really nice. So then I think I kind of moved into this space of starting to feel more secure and confident in myself, and in that, I think my mental health got better. Then the pandemic came, and so that was challenging. It's funny, I was just looking back over some notes that I had. I run an online series called Gathering in Grief, which uses traditional stories to bring people together to explore themes of grief. And I was reflecting what I had written when I was developing it. And whew, that pause, that just slowing down, allowed so much to bubble up that I maybe knew was there but hadn't fully acknowledged before, just certain parts of my own story that I hadn't let come to the surface because I was always keeping myself busy.
I just want to pause on that for a moment, actually, because the way you've described certain things that weren't coming to the surface, that you maybe weren't allowing to come to the surface, and then the contrast of the turbulence of mental illness with sometimes it seems like we create turbulence, like you described, of like going out, you know, that life can be so tough, and life as an artist can be so tough, figuring out how to make everything work and be creative, but also manage the finances. And so sometimes it feels like, certainly for me, you find ways to thrive in a certain level of chaos that then can feel productive. That you're like, oh, I've had a like really hectic work day and I've not slept very much, but it feels like freedom to now go out and party all night, you know, and that makes me feel less that I'm like on the grind, even though obviously I'm going to regret it, and not getting enough sleep is going to make my mental health worse.
For sure. And it's interesting how we can kind of wear these things as a badge of honor, can't we, of being really busy and not having enough time for ourselves and being everywhere all the time. You know, I think I'm someone who quite likes to have it all, and I want to go to all the events and show up and experience these things. But I think it certainly has an impact, doesn't it? And yeah, I think a shift in perspective around how one can be creative, that actually this kind of historical belief, you know, that you kind of have to have the madness for the genius. I'm not always so sure that that's really what it's all about. I think you can have a more balanced life and still produce and create and be fulfilled that way. But it is certainly maybe intoxicating when you get in those rhythms, and not always so easy to stop.
Yeah. And I think in itself, it feels artistic in a strange way. Like it feels like something out of a movie scene. That contrast, like I'm reminded of Lady Gaga's Marry the Night video, where she sort of artistically recreates a breakdown that she had when her pop career, she was dropped by her management, and she had to basically start over to get to where she is today. And looking through the lens of that as a music video, you can really buy into the beauty and the chaos. And I think creative people are maybe encouraged to do that a little bit too much. At its extreme, it sometimes feels to me like a sort of societal gaslighting of, you're meant to struggle as an artist. You not getting paid fairly for your work, or you struggling to get by, is part of the process. And won't it make a beautiful movie of your life one day?
Yeah, and it's almost an excuse society can use for not valuing things like the arts and saying, no, why? Yeah, just get on with it. And I guess in these maybe more chaotic spaces, there is this idea of input, you know, of like experiencing different things and feeling different emotions and having kind of new stimuli or something. And yeah, I'm sure that can provide fodder, or that can provide inspiration for making things or for creating. But also I know in myself, I've learned more and more, it's actually the moments when I really slow down and look inward that things come forward that feel really authentic and genuine. I think sometimes when I'm caught up in these chaotic sort of cycles, I'm actually I'm too outward looking and wondering what other people want or how I can fit into spaces. But that kind of going inwards really helps me feel like I create stuff that feels like an extension of myself and not trying to be something for someone else.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you were really exploring that more comfortable space within your relationship and within the flatmate situation where you got so close to Helen and found that actually you can be really inspired and find it so much easier to reflect in a deep way when you feel comfortable and safe. And so you were going to tell me then about the pandemic coming along and what happened then to your lovely safe space.
It's all the safety I created. Well, I mean, in some ways I feel really blessed because I was really fortunate, as I mentioned, to have already the some of these support mechanisms around me. And then having been in the UK at the time, I was really lucky that I was furloughed for a job I was working. And so, and that was so lucky. I was freelancing for a company for almost a year. And then in February, we had this discussion. We're like, okay, I'll become employed for 2 days a week. And then March is when the pandemic hit. And if you hadn't been employed from February, you didn't qualify for furlough. So it was just this like really perfect timing.
Wow.
So I feel very, very grateful for that. Not sure what would have happened otherwise. But yeah, this kind of really slowing down the frenetic pace that I'd lived before. And yeah, and opening up this space to really feel a lot of things, profound sadness, grieving elements from when I was younger. I mean, you know, I've been on here before talking about parts of my past and my history and like really connecting into those things and allowing myself to let those feelings come through. But yeah, I think one of the biggest things really that slowing down during the pandemic allowed me to connect to, specifically around my mental health, was the impact that my menstrual cycle has on my mental well-being. Like, I don't know, it's something that's quite pushed aside in our sort of everyday conversation in society. I mean, more and more, I'm quite open and honest about the times that I am on my period, or I feel quite happy to speak about it. But I know a lot of people are really uncomfortable with this. And so within that, once I stopped having all these things to do, I noticed these natural sort of waves my mood went on. So when I was ovulating or closer to ovulating, that I had this more energy and sort of brightness, or as my menstruation was approaching, I kind of went into this much more inward and like sort of darker and reflective time. And I had this realization that all of my mental health journey began when I hit puberty and adolescence, which is also the time that I started menstruating. And so I got really kind of curious, like, wow, what role has that played in my mental health treatment? But that's never explicitly been acknowledged or addressed or even factored in, because yeah, I don't know, I've never had a professional sort of speak to me about how my menstrual cycle impacts my mood. And so I've had this time where I just began really clear to notice the rhythmicness of it every month, which was super, super mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, and I think that's so great that you've realized that, because perhaps because this still isn't talked about enough, it so often takes the being, I wouldn't even just say a problem, because I think women do put up with a great deal of variance when it comes to menstruation, but it has to be something very extreme outside of a usual cycle before you then get any specific support with that. And I've known a lot of friends go through that, where it's to the extent where they're needing to take time off work, or there's certain medications they're having, or they're going to have, you know, all kinds of invasive examinations. And, you know, the level of emotional turmoil and stress that can cause is massive, irrespective of whether or not you have mental illness to factor into that as well.
For sure. And feels confusing sometimes, because it's something so natural and like part of biological cycle. And I guess historically, I mean, this speaks to maybe wider elements about perhaps patriarchal impact on medicine or whatnot, but yeah, that it isn't more appreciated and understood and discussed. Because what I guess I used to get frustrated with myself I'm feeling very lucky that I don't have any, like, you know, I don't have polycystic ovarian syndrome, or, you know, I don't have really profound PMDD, premenstrual dysmorphic disorder, anything. I have a fairly regular cycle for myself, but even still, I'd start to get to places where I felt like, okay, it's good. I'm on it. I'm feeling all right. And then I'd have these points where I would dip again. And I don't know, in the past, like this has been connected with things like, oh, well, it's maybe, you know, bipolar or it's this or it's that. And I've actually started to recognize it feels really connected to my menstrual cycle for me. And I know that that's just my own body. And that's something I've had the fortune to connect into and really learn and listen about. But it was quite like liberating. Like it gives me space that during these different times of the month, I'm more aware. I track my cycle now and I can give myself a bit more spaciousness and say, actually, I know that during this specific week of this month, I'll need to move a bit slower or I might feel a bit more inward and that's okay. And I can kind of adapt my life around that a bit. And that feels really incredible because it just had never occurred to me before, which also is so crazy somehow for me that it never came up.
Yeah, but I think it's very understandable because like you said, there is this element of it's a natural experience. And sometimes that's taken in a way of just get on with it then. You know, that's how it can be treated. And, you know, even as a man looking at some of the, you know, adverts you see of women roller skating and stuff, it's like, do you want to roller skate those days of the month? You know, like, yeah, so it's sort of like, it's not even enough that you can sort of feel sore and sit down. You're then expected to like get through it so much, like go be sporty specifically on these days. It's, I don't know, it's as an outsider very strange to see. And it sounds like it's been very reassuring for you to know how much of a factor this can be. And so even though that isn't a fix in itself, you can then take actions and be more understanding towards your moods on different days.
Definitely. And I can be more articulate to others around me as well about knowing where I'm at. And I think that's been helpful. Yeah, giving myself permission to rest in those moments too, which I think then going back to this idea of the pandemic, enforced rest, that now I think I've kind of understood actually sometimes these periods of rest do have space in our lives and it's helpful to allow them even when there isn't something wildly outside of your control and some extenuating factor like a global pandemic. So I think it's given me a new perspective as well on spaces to slow down.
Yeah, and that's it. In the simplest cases, there are certain days where your body is doing extra things. And so that in itself is tiring before we even get into the hormonal changes that go on as well. And so perhaps a more sort of holistic approach to your body and, you know, understanding maybe a different pace throughout the month. Sounds really nice.
Yeah, it's been one of the silver linings I've reflected on during the time that's come out of it, so...
And so I know another thing that you were reflecting on during the pandemic and the time of furlough was this urge to move and something that you'd done previously coming from the States to study and then stay in Edinburgh. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It's a bit more complex and nuanced, I think, as life always is. So I've moved to Budapest in Hungary, and this desire has been there for a very, very long time. My grandparents were refugees to the US from Hungary in 1956. There was a Soviet occupation in Hungary and a revolution that tried to happen and failed, unfortunately. And so it was a time that a lot of people left. They fled the country. And so my grandparents were some of these people. And so, yeah, growing up, my mom, you know, spoke Hungarian, but she never really taught me. It kind of was in the fringes. Sometimes she would say certain words to me, or when she met up with my aunts, her sisters, they would speak Hungarian. And I always wanted to know what they were saying. And I never really did. And so, yeah, from a long time ago, from when I was really young, I always had this dream to learn Hungarian. Kind of one of these things that it feels slightly random. Obviously for me, it's grounded in my own familial experience. But I think people would be like, like, why would you want to learn Hungarian? Like, it's not a very useful language. And what are you going to do with it? And so it was something that was just kind of there, this big dream. And so I had come to Hungary in 2015 for 1 month to do a language course. And so I was just in university in Edinburgh at that time. And I was kind of like, okay, I really like it here. This is cool. I'd like to do this more. But somehow, I don't know, it felt like an even bigger step to say, yes, I'm going to go and make the move now to Hungary from Edinburgh, where I've come. And I guess then the funny part is I applied to come to do this scholarship program that exists. So there's this program called the Balassi Intézet. And if you have Hungarian heritage, they'll give you a scholarship for a year to come learn Hungarian and connect to your heritage. Hmm. So I learned about it when I was there for the month in 2015. And so it was always in the back of my head, kind of like waving its little hand gently. And then I was always doing stuff. I was studying and then I started a business. Okay, not time. And finally, I don't know, something I was just like, okay, I need to do this. I'm applying. And I applied in the first week of March of 2020. So just right before things fully like clicked of being pandemic times.
Oh, wow. Because I thought the way you were talking then, it was going to build up to the pandemic gave you the space to be like, okay, a lot's on hold. Now I go. Ooh, unexpected.
No. Yeah, it was more, this is what I meant when it was more nuanced, because I had made the decision. I was like, okay, I want to go and do this. I applied and then it was like, haha, just kidding, pandemic. And so there was a lot of uncertainty. They were like, we don't know if we're going to run the program. And so pretty much it was just a question mark for these months. And I was supposed to move in August if it was going to happen. And it was only 3 weeks before that they said, actually, yes, it's happening. You can come. So I made the decision that if it did happen, I was going to go. Because even during the pandemic, I thought, you know what else is happening at the moment? I'd rather take this time and opportunity. And yeah, at the time, Hungary seemed less intense in their pandemicking. But anyway, that's kind of a not important part of the story. And so, yeah, I had to give up my flat. I kind of made all the preparations as if I was going to go and didn't actually know that it was going to happen. And then, in fact, it did. And so I made the move. And I moved here in August of last year, in this little window when Hungary had reduced a lot of its restrictions. And so I kind of just managed to make it into the country even.
Wow. And what a time to be moving, then obviously going back into more restrictions again. And so what was it like that initial time of arriving in Hungary, setting up a whole life in a different country for the second time in your life?
Yeah, I mean, it was intense. It was thrilling. It was confusing. It was complicated, certainly, by COVID. Yeah, because I had to quarantine when I arrived. So I went into the countryside and I spent 2 weeks just on my own in a little room. And that was actually quite nice. And then I came into the city and I was given dormitory accommodation with the scholarship. And I got there. And then the next day, they quarantined the whole building again because they were like, haha, just kidding. We haven't really planned this well. We're not sure how everyone's situation. Everyone's stuck in this building for another 2 weeks. So I arrived to Hungary and had a great month-long quarantine, which was not expected.
Oh, well, so they didn't know if everyone that had arrived had done their quarantine, and so they started again?
Well, pretty much they tried to administrate it that you lived on different floors. So if you'd quarantined on your own, then you're supposed to be on this floor, and the people that hadn't were on the other floor. But then when everyone arrived, they didn't actually keep everyone from mixing. So then they just sort of became uncertain whether people were sick or not. And so, yeah, it was quite weird to live in a dormitory during a pandemic. It is a bizarre experience because there's loads of people in close proximity. You know, you're never sure. And then if you did get COVID, there was the fifth floor where there was no one staying and they just take you and stick you in a room up there again on your own for 2 weeks. And so, yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, overarchingly, when I look back, and obviously I can't look back with full awareness because we're still in the midst of things, it felt like such an exciting thing, like having this big change in a time where everyone is kind of doing the same thing every day. And there's a lot of sort of, yeah, rhythm that has,
yeah,
that doesn't change. You're in your same room, in your same living room, same kitchen. So that was super exciting. But then certainly it meant that I couldn't have the full experience in many ways, because in November, then they went to complete lockdown, curfew at 8 p.m., you know, couldn't really go out after 8 p.m. at all. And so, you know, that was difficult, but I felt really lucky. I managed to move out of the dormitory and I found someone to live with. And so then I kind of, yeah, again, found myself in this space of discovery and slowing down. But this time I was also studying Hungarian online and accomplishing this thing that has been a life dream. So that's felt really exhilarating because, you know, you have maybe things in your head that you're like, one day I will achieve this. And then when you're actually making steps to do that, you're like, oh my gosh, wait, am I doing this? Is this happening? And in fact, it is for me, at least in this moment.
Mm. Yeah, that's super exciting. And I think particularly you've benefited from the contrast there of knowing how much people's lives all over the world are restricted at a time when you're getting to live out the beginnings of a dream. It's so lovely to hear. It's an interesting contrast to my own experience because, like you, I'd very much grown up with living in Ireland as an option in the back of my mind. And I'd spent so much time here growing up, and my parents had very much been keen to educate my sister and I about how much our culture had influenced, like, their perspective on the world, how they raised us, who we were. And as I got older, I very much found that to play out and be very true, that I had a different perspective to a lot of people around me. And I often found by default, I had a lot more in common with people of really any minority than I did often with the white British population. And that became such a big sort of fortress of my identity in a way, to be able to relate to ethnicity as a form of both otherhood and inclusion. So then as an adult, when I didn't get to spend as much time here as I would have liked, you know, I was so busy working, like yourself, being self-employed. And so, you know, no one else is going to pick up the phone for you. You've got to keep at it. And not always prioritizing, taking the time, feeling like I had to constantly be on that grind, or I don't know, things would crash and burn. You know, looking back, how realistic was that? You know, yes and no, right? But when it came to the pandemic, I had this big plan for 2020 that I was going to move to Ireland for 6 months and live in Dublin and reimmerse myself in my culture more and catch up with loads of family that I don't get to see very much, and all of these things in my head. And it was going to be like a bit of a sabbatical, a chance to take the foot off the gas a little bit and reflect on what I'd done in my life so far and what was going to come next in terms of my work. And of course, it ended up, like you've had, being a very different experience than I might have imagined, where I did have the chance to slow down, but it was because of a pandemic and because of me being locked inside in a flat and my plans for 2020 as the year that I go on and do this move. I think, like a lot of people that saw that round number and made plans about it, I was disappointed. And so I was, I think, getting more and more impatient to go, but knowing that it wouldn't be the same kind of experience as I was really hoping for unless I waited until the restrictions were lifting in a way that, as much as we can know, feels more permanent. And so that's why I find myself moving more recently than you.
There was a point you mentioned on this idea of taking a sabbatical, and that was certainly how I was framing coming to Budapest in my mind. I've been running Real Talk for the past 4 years. I was thinking, actually, maybe I need some space and I can reevaluate what I'm doing in my life and this and that. But yes, the pandemic had other thoughts. So because of everything moving online, it really changed the nature of how I was able to work whilst I was here. So I continued to do work while I was studying for my course. And yeah, that one feels a bit interesting because I think I would have really enjoyed the space to just focus on my studies. But then somehow, because the opportunity was there of being able to still kind of have my fingers in all the pies some way, I find that such a funny phrase, maybe one foot in, one foot out, I kind of held both, and I found that to be actually quite a challenging experience at points, because I kind of was a bit in both worlds still, and I think I would have appreciated fully planting both feet here. But also, that being said, there is this silver lining again that I was able to develop the work online, and that's been really helpful now where I've decided actually to remain in Budapest longer. But yeah, I just was resonating with this idea of sabbatical and kind of craving this space for pause and reflection, and then noticing how maybe I actually didn't have that in the same way because of the nature of work changing, actually. So sometimes I think we can use moving physical space to give that distance, but then obviously all of the distances totally collapse in the sense that we now did everything online, so it doesn't matter where in the world you are, you could still connect. So I found that to be a very interesting part of this whole experience.
Yes, and I'm very glad you can relate to that, because I've wondered if that is strangely niche from my perspective, because, you know, here I am hosting what is in many ways a UK-based podcast, right? That it's about 60% of our listeners are within the UK, and the other two members of my team are. And so whilst I'm in Dublin, there's still a lot about the show which is sort of coming from that perspective, you know, behind the scenes. And that's been a strange thing to even verbalize at times, because sometimes I find myself saying, you know, here in the UK, when I'm recording since moving, and it's like, oh, but that doesn't make sense. Or I say, you know, here in Dublin, and then I'm like, oh, but I'm glad that you're nodding, because I'm like, is this way too niche? But I think there is something about your work and your friends and your family spanning more than one country that can be a sort of a drain on your energy, just the sort of almost like mental navigating between the places.
Definitely. Our bodies certainly couldn't move as fast as our digital selves can. And so that can be quite, I think just confusing, as you said. And I felt the same thing, you know, still having a lot of my clients in the UK, and they'll kind of say, okay, where are you? Or when you're coming back? And then now that things are opening up, particularly like slightly more, that, understanding, all right, well, what does that mean now? Because I'm here and things are there. And so it's very interesting. And it feels obviously like such a modern specific situation to find ourselves in, that we're kind of still able to connect with community in a space that's maybe different to the physical space that we're located in. And I think the pandemic has totally just shifted and altered that for everyone, our ability to connect over space and time. And
And I guess maybe the simplest way of explaining that in a broader way is perhaps that it can be such a drain on us to be switching between different tasks, right? That's something that you learn about if you're learning about kind of efficiency and work ever, you know, this idea that it's so much easier to like continue solidly at a task than to be switching between several, because there's a certain amount of energy and almost like a mental reset that it takes you to be like, okay, now I'm focusing on this thing. I've got to tune into this separate task. And I guess it's a little bit like that. And then it's exacerbated by the moving process as well. You know, whether you're moving within a country or internationally, you've still got a life to live. You've still got your commitments and your social networks and everything else. But you've got the background of, oh, I'm thinking about a lamp I need to buy for this room whilst I'm on an important Zoom meeting. Like, there's just all these extra things to think about.
Definitely. Yeah. And you were asking me before about, you know, I think I've expressed and connected with a lot of the kind of positivity and excitement of making this move, because it's connected to such a big dream for me. But, you know, what are maybe the sort of shadow sides of the parts that have been difficult or challenging for my mental health? And yeah, I mean, there's some of like the very practical bits of moving, which are based on, you know, feeling comfortable and safe in a space and feeling grounded. And yeah, for me, like that, those initial months living in a dormitory were quite kind of trippy, because a lot of the people were younger than myself, you know, and I was kind of also like holding these other things. I was running my business and I had my relationship back in the UK. And then I was with a lot of people who were just in a very different phase of their life. And then I also didn't have my room to myself. I was living with someone else. I had a literal roommate. And so, yeah, that was definitely a challenge. But then in choosing to leave that, I ended up moving. I've moved three more times since. I've been in Hungary and I've been here a year and a bit. So that's been certainly, you know, kind of draining of energy. And
the perfect guest for this topic, then. The perfect guest.
I'm kind of perpetually moving somehow. But actually, now that this place that I'm in, I really, really like. And so, and I mean, that's a challenge, isn't it? To find somewhere that we feel comfortable. So like the first place I moved was temporary. I always knew it was the next place. There were just certain kind of logistical elements. And I realized I wanted to live with more people. And so then trying to seek that out and really trying to tease out what it is you need and want from a living situation and then making it happen, especially in a place where, you know, I particularly further in the past didn't speak Hungarian as well. And so, you know, then some of these like practical limitations of like conversing with people and sourcing all these different things. And so that was definitely something that felt a bit tricky.
For sure. And there's just so much that you have to consider in addition to what everyone else is doing, going about their day-to-day life. You're doing so much to take in your environment and find, okay, what's my routine in this place? You know, what parts of my day-to-day are the same and what parts are different? And, you know, sometimes that's big things and sometimes that's, oh, the cereal here is a different brand name. Is this one as good?
Yeah, and then coming from the US, it's like there's so many cereals. Sorry, the cereal thing is, but in here, not so many. Yeah, I think something else that really was really incredibly difficult in moving was then entering into a long distance relationship. And yeah, that actually relationship has since ended very recently. And so I think I'm still holding a lot of heartbreak and grief around that, and just really recognizing how much being somewhere else, you know, impacted that whole thing. And so throughout this time, it was both a source of security and comfort, but then also sometimes challenge and miscommunication and pain. And so that was something that really had an impact on my well-being. I think on both ends of the spectrum, really interestingly, because I think things very infrequently are just so black and white, good and bad. And so, yeah, it certainly has changed the nature of all of my relationships, not just the romantic ones. So that is a part that I'm also still trying to make sense of and understand, because I still feel very much in it at the moment. So I'm not sure I have so much like pinpointed insight yet.
Yeah, still working on that neat learning. But I think that's so difficult. And I've done long distance before myself, including once internationally. I had an ex that was going to be away studying in France for, I want to say 6 months, but it could have also been a year. And I feel bad for not remembering. But you know, it is such a challenge, and it's such an intense emotional tie to have, you know, when you've moved somewhere and you're trying to sort of settle in and you've got a piece of your love living so far away, you know. And so whilst he can be reassuring, he's also taking you away from the present moment and putting you in the mindset of his life and his place and his local area and all the things that you've moved away from. And so I think even that can be a sort of a strange emotional strain, to be sort of like mentally traveling to a place that you've left and connecting so strongly to it at a time when you're actively putting down roots not there.
Definitely. And then there is this whole lens then of then the impact of the pandemic on all this, and that it was even more exponentially complicated by the fact travel and actually physically coming together and seeing each other was so incredibly difficult. And, you know, that's just a sort of extra layer of challenge that at the best of times is a difficult situation. And so, yeah, that still feels quite difficult to hold, of like, you know, having made this decision and still moved during a pandemic, and then the knock-on impacts that had and how we were able to relate and connect to each other. And these things that were very much outside of our control, but yet still were so situational, because had this happened not in a pandemic, that type of restriction wouldn't have been there. And so, yeah, it just feels still like something I'm still making sense of.
Absolutely. And if I may share a bit of my own experience that you've had more to reflect on, because this is newer for me than it is for you, I'm finding, still being fairly early on in my move, having been in Dublin for just over a month now. I'm having this experience a lot lately where I've got all the logistical things you describe happening behind the scenes of like setting up my flat and making it feel homely to me, sort of making sure I've got everything I need here, making sure Milan is settled in. And so all of that is happening. And currently I'm looking for a flatmate as well. So there's all this sort of like day-to-day stuff that relates to the household. And then there's also all the stuff that relates to venturing out into the world and catching up with family more and making friends here and figuring out, you know, how much I work from home, how much I work from maybe a shared workspace or coffee shops, which are my favourites. I've joined a new yoga studio and I've got back into yoga, which was on my to-do list for about 4 years, having stopped it one January where my place got really busy. And I was like, ugh, all these yoga people just here for their New Year's resolutions. And I meant to go back and I never got round to it. And so I've been experiencing a certain level of turbulence when it comes to my mental health that I think relates to how much is going on. So I'm so excited to be here and to be settling in, and so much of the surroundings are familiar from spending so much time here, particularly when I was younger. And yet there's also the adult part of like the practicalities, which are stressful and are causing me to be very tired as I adapt to everything. And so it can mean some days I'm waking up and I'm feeling quite under strain or underslept, in contrast to the excitement. And so do you remember kind of navigating that and what that was like? I'm also welcome to any tips you have.
For sure. Yeah, I think kind of in the deep of winter last year, so probably a little less than a year ago, I think as well feeling quite lonely, and you haven't really been able to meet so many people, and then you're not even allowed to meet people because you can't go outside, and, you know, just kind of feeling quite isolated. And so, I ended up reaching out and finding a therapist here. And so in February of this year, I found someone to speak to, and that's been absolutely incredible. It's been the best therapeutic encounter that I've had in my life, which feels really special because I've had a lot of them. And a lot of that feels like luck of just like finding the right thing. I mean, literally from searching online. But yeah, I mean, I felt like making a lot of time to reach out to the relationships that I already had that I knew that were strong. So my friends across the world from back in the US, from back in Edinburgh, and making time for us to speak with each other. I also started to run quite a lot, and I found that to be really helpful for me. And I even found an outdoor running group that was meeting. We were all training for a half marathon, and that felt really helpful to have a kind of rhythm and space to come to that. Yeah, I knew we were going to be meeting and I could go and hop in and feel like, okay, I can move my body, because that felt really important too. But then I think a particular point that felt really, really tricky for me was I kind of touched upon it before, of like finding the right place to live. And there was a time where I kind of moved into a space and then it just wasn't exactly right. And this is a really difficult thing because I don't know, housing situations are very important. And, you know, then if you've signed a lease, or then if you have to negotiate with your flatmates, and yeah, this felt really tricky. And at certain points I felt really uncomfortable. And this obviously had a knock-on impact on how I was just feeling overall. And yeah, I mean, it just happened, like a lot of factors came in together that meant I was able to find a new place and go, but that took a few months. And so a lot of intentional conversations and speaking to my support network and trying to like process and make sense of, okay, what can I do to make sure I feel okay? And yeah, those are the things that are coming up to my mind at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And I think it sort of reminds me of sometimes this feeling of being overstimulated, that there's just so much you're adapting to and so much kind of newness to take in about. It's one thing, certainly for me, to spend a lot of time in a place particularly when you're younger, and then another time to be an adult where you're the one making the decisions and you're in charge of your own day to day and figuring out where you fit somewhere. It's a lot to navigate. And I think that's something that I'm really looking forward to working on, where I get to the place of feeling like I can be really, really open with people around me here, because I think I'm still a little bit at the point where a lot of the people I know are people that I've not seen as much as I would have liked to over the last few years. And obviously the pandemic's a big part of that. And so the majority of the people that I feel I can be very open with and say, this thing happened today, and here's like three levels down to which I've analysed it. That's a bit more than everyone is sort of open to hearing or can easily get. That is very normal for me to analyse things deeply. And I've been in counselling for 3 years, and I'm very in touch with what a lot of the factors in my mental health are. But predominantly for now, a lot of the people aren't living locally who I feel I can talk to that depth about, and they're not going to worry. They're going to understand like, oh yeah, he's figuring it all out. I'm used to him talking with this level of complexity about things that sometimes might feel simple on the outside. It's such a process, but an exciting one as well.
Totally resonate with that though, because I think as well, I crave some of these really like deep and vulnerable and authentic relationships. And I think I'm still in the process of finding those here. And so sometimes, yeah, I think that contributes to this feeling of maybe feeling a bit lonely or yeah, still trying to find your footing in a place, because it's hard as well. I mean, I think I'm someone who's actually pretty exceptionally open. I tend to just go quite deep anyway. And so yeah, I think I've found I'm lucky in that. Yeah. Then sometimes it attracts the right people, you know, and you're like, okay, cool. But then also, yeah, not everyone's willing to hold that. And also sometimes you still can hold that back because you don't want to just like pour it all out on the table for people if you're not fully sure if they're ready or willing to meet you there. But I had this other reflection, like, I think overarchingly, you know, my mental health has been the best that it's been in my life at this period and in this time. And just, I think, you know, I've had these moments where I've, you know, had wobbles or have had moments of really profound and turbulent feeling. But I also feel like I've been able to kind of connect in all of the things that have led me to here, like all of the different situations that I've been on where I've worked on different parts of myself, or I've understood what my self-care techniques are, who is in my, you know, kind of sphere of support. And I think then there is this layer of feeling really empowered by having made a choice to do something that is so important to me, you know, in the midst of so many extenuating factors that could have stopped me, whether it was a pandemic or it maybe being maybe not a fruitful goal or, you know, all these different things that could have held me back. I feel like I was like, whoa, this feels so important. Like, I need to do this. I feel this inside of me. And so, yeah, I think in the beginning, especially when I was like, wow, all this excitement, I think I'm somehow still really connected into this. And I guess it just feels very crazy to say it. I'm like, wow, as I'm saying it out loud, I'm just kind of reflecting on that and feeling a lot of gratitude and like, woof, I'm still not sure how to handle this, because I think it's also something difficult when you're so, like for me, like used to my mental health being such a big part of how I've had to like take care of myself in my life, and these in a period of feeling like, whoa, actually, I'm really like, it's kind of all making sense. It feels really foreign. So I'm like, oh my gosh, wow. I don't know. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I love that. And I relate to that a lot of, yeah, that central empowerment of, this is a decision that was really important to me, and I've committed to it at a time when there's a lot that makes it more difficult to do so. And I think similarly, that's sort of like the central rudder for me of, even on a day that it may feel like there's a lot going on and there's a lot to cope with, or I'm having just a good or a bad mental health day generally, there's still that central thing of, I feel like I'm in the right place that this makes sense and I've done the right thing and I'm so glad and grateful to myself really for making this choice that in many ways wasn't easy and to some people in my life isn't necessarily as obvious a choice, but it mm-hmm. makes sense to me. And yeah, I think that's part of the reason why I so wanted to have this conversation with you, because it's so lovely to connect on that front and hear how great you're doing. It's so exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, it really is. But then it's funny, actually, I had therapy today and was just really recognizing, like, I think being here and has opened up this space for me to now reflect on other parts of my life and really like allow and feel and make sense of certain things that I hadn't felt ready or able to do so before. And this idea of finding it really difficult to fully step into my power and be like, yes, I'm in a good place and I'm owning this and I'm doing it. And I can see, I think, where part of that is like these internalized messages and beliefs I've had about myself, like whether that's through my mental health treatment or through different, I don't know, traumatic experiences that I've been through. Like it's really hard to even claim. And so I think that kind of feels like this point where I'm really trying to hold myself gently, but also noticing that it's a space for me to work in and make sense of, because I really want to be able to fully just be like, yes, I'm in it in myself and I feel good in this, because sometimes it's really hard to let myself do that. And for me, that actually connects into my mental health journey, because I think there are residual, as I said, things that are still these tendrils that are wrapped up in my beliefs of myself and messages I was given and handed and labels and things that to sort through all of them and feel empowered to say, no, I'm here and I'm good. Like it makes me really emotional, actually. And I'm maybe laughing in a certain way in order to handle that somehow in this right now. But yeah, it feels really interesting.
Mm. I relate to that a lot. And I think for me, that's something that can often happen where I find myself in a certain level of comfort and I don't quite trust it. And in the back of my mind, there's something that goes, we've been here before. We've thought that things are going to work out, that your life is kind of coming together and you're getting to a point where you are going to feel more stable and more safe. And then things get thrown up that contradict that. And I think so much of my journey when it comes to mental health has been about finding what it is for me to feel safe, finally. And I definitely feel like I'm getting nearer to that here. But like you say, it's not even as easy as finding that place sometimes. It's also feeling settled in it, that it can still feel unfamiliar. Like, am I really going to be okay this time? And none of us can say, but I think it sounds like you're in a very resilient place and you're already so articulate about your mental health and such an incredible storyteller through your work. And so I'm all on board for you owning your power. And I don't think people are going to be surprised by it, put it that way. They're going to be like, no, it does make sense for her to hold a room because she already has that in her.
Mm, thank you. That's really nice to hear. And yeah, whew. It's really, I guess, I wanted to bring up this other thing that just popped into my head briefly of this idea of belonging has really I've been thinking about and sitting with lately. You know, I think when I left the US, part of me felt like I didn't belong there. And that's been in and of itself a thing that I've needed to grieve and make sense of, because it's kind of sad not to belong where you grew up, because it feels like that would be the logical place to belong. And then, you know, I went to Edinburgh and I made this community and I was able to also craft a place that I started to feel like I belonged. And then now I've left that because something in me has kind of said, okay, well, you need something over here. And Yeah, I'm not really sure what I'm trying to get with that, but other than maybe this sort of sense of how I'm starting to find belonging in myself and not in a physical space, and that feeling like a really powerful journey. Because, yeah, I'm not sure, does belonging mean you have to have one place that you want to live for the rest of your life? Or does belonging mean wherever you go, you feel secure in who you are and you create that safety? Or, yeah, I still am asking myself this question. And I guess it feels like in coming somewhere new again, I'm really bringing it to the forefront of, okay, how do I create community here for myself? How do I allow myself to feel safe and set those things up? And yeah, will I belong here? Where do I belong? Is there a way that I can create that sense of security and safety like within me so that no matter where I am, I feel okay? I'm still wondering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm relating to a lot of this, and certainly there are elements of my experience in England specifically where belonging's been a tricky thing to feel consistently. And certainly over the last few years, and for me a big factor has been since the Brexit vote, I haven't felt I belong as much. And there have been many external things that have happened that feel like they've enforced that. And so part of my urgency in a way of taking this time in Dublin was to get a chance to sort of have a bit of space to explore that and sort of have a chance to recharge away from certain experiences that have been tricky over the last few years. And so it's weird to talk about because it feels very vulnerable, and it feels like a difficult thing to say because I don't like to admit that people can get to me, but I don't feel, as coming back to that idea of safety, I don't feel as safe living in Birmingham as I used to. And that makes me very sad to say out loud. And it doesn't actually feel like it's a reflection on the place. But there are smaller things that have happened that have made me feel that way. And I'm glad to feel like I have the space at the moment and through counselling and other kinds of things going on to explore that, because I think it's important that I do. And I think you're probably right that ultimately the place is finding the way to be comfortable in yourself first, and then place yourself and therefore your little bubble of comfort wherever you find yourself. That sounds like a very powerful place to be. And in the past, I've felt that more than I feel that at the moment. And so I look forward to that coming back more, and I'm working on it. But it's, yeah, now I'm feeling emotional too.
Thanks for sharing that. That is a big thing to acknowledge and realize. And yeah, I think it's something to be grieved when you leave a space and you're feeling maybe some ambiguity about it or conflict around what its place is and role in your life. And yeah, I mean, as you've reflected back, this thing about having this bubble of yourself feeling secure enough in it, like, I think there is more complexity to that because, you know, we are social creatures. And I think I'm certainly not advocating that, you know, you just have to be perfectly zen on the inside and then it doesn't matter where you are, because, you know, there's so much that influences us. And I mean, there's also like living in Hungary, for example, there's a very challenging political situation. I really do not agree with like the current ruling government and a lot of their treatment of the queer community and like all different kinds of things that I've also had to like make sense of and justify in my own head or at least, you know, process. And yeah, so obviously context is also important, and community and the people you are surrounded with. And I guess I'm noticing now, because of the world that we live in, I feel like I've been able to resource myself with a community that can go with me anywhere because of the nature of technology. But then that doesn't diminish the importance of then finding spaces here as well that I also feel like I can connect in and be a part of. And yeah, I wonder as well, like feeling quite lucky in coming to Hungary because I have heritage here. There's like an extra layer of feeling like, oh, maybe I could or do belong here, because, you know, even when I speak Hungarian, I have a fairly good accent, so I've been told, but I think it's because, you know, I heard my mother speaking it. And so like when I do speak Hungarian, people are kind of are like, wait, are you Hungarian? Are you not? And so I kind of get to rest in this really interesting space of, I don't know, can I claim this mantle in a way? And that's also been interesting, like, yeah. Identity as you move in different places, so like being American when I moved to the UK and then like coming here and how it's shifted and changed.
Yeah, no, I think that is really powerful. And it's interesting there what you said about identity, because to add a little bit more context to what I was mentioning about feelings of where I fit in Britain and specifically England, and that's very much been how a lot of my experiences growing up were, that when in many ways, when I didn't fit in, the context of my culture was like the missing piece to put that together. And I've learned to be articulate about certain cultural differences that may seem insignificant to some people, but have really helped me make a lot of sense of myself and the way I interact with the world. And it's interesting to be in a time where there's a lot of turbulence in government and in societies all over the world, and the pandemic can be part of that, and find myself being, I think, more grateful than I ever have, that I've got such a strength of cultural identity and something that I can tap into. And so, yeah, plenty of British friends have been like, I would love to go live in Ireland for 6 months, but I don't know anybody there and I don't know if I would fit in. And it's, you know, it's been interesting to have that contrast, whereas I grew up very much of people not understanding why Irish people move all over the world so much, you know, that being a cultural difference that sometimes people that their family has stayed in one place struggle to relate to. And now we're in this strange time where people can relate to it more. It's been odd. So I don't really have a summary point for this conversation, but we time-wise do need to start wrapping up here. So if anyone's listening and they've moved country, or they've even moved house within the same country, and they're relating to a lot of what we're saying, is there any kind of final message you'd want to share being over a year in to adapting to this? Yeah?
Sure, let me think a moment.
To be fair to you, that wasn't a real question. I just added yeah on the end. Made it into one.
Yeah. Well, I think really honoring the very real kind of the chaos that moving can bring into our lives. So the very practical parts of packing things up and shipping or moving or transporting them and then unpacking and trying to settle into a new place, of really honoring that can be such a difficult thing in and of itself, and recognizing that we can hold many different perspectives on the same thing, that it can be an exciting and tantalizing opportunity just at the same time as feeling isolating or difficult, and that's okay. And I suppose from my own experience, I felt quite fortunate to have this virtual support system I've been able to reach out to, that's given me the strength to then reach out in a more physical and I guess intentional way here in the space that I'm actually in. And so I suppose maybe I'm trying to say something around the value of having support in those moments when we need to move, if you can. And then also recognizing, like, maybe not everyone has that support. And so are there other ways that we can find textures of safety for ourselves when we're in these moments of really big transition? Because a move is just a really physical form of transition. And I feel like the physical move here has also shepherded in a very transitional kind of time in my emotional landscape and sort of psychic landscape as well. So I think these things are quite interconnected.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we will wrap up there. And if people want to catch up on your work and find more of you online, where should they go? Mm-hmm.
So I'm just in the process of building a personal website for myself, which will be lilyash.com, but it doesn't exist yet. And then as well, I run Real Talk, which is a mental health storytelling organization, and that's realtalkproject.org. And from there, you should be able to find me on social media and things.
Exciting. Well, I will link both of those in the episode description. So you've got 2 weeks for that website to be live.
Woo! I love a deadline!
All right. Thank you so much. It's been so lovely catching up with you.
It's been great to chat. Thanks so much for asking me.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.